Abigail Pogrebin is an identical twin, and she admits that although she's in her 40s, she's still often mistaken for her sister Robin, who's a New York Times reporter. In One and the Same, My Life as an Identical Twin, and What I've Learned About Everyone's Struggle to Be Singular, Abigail weaves together her personal story of being a twin with an investigation into the nature of twinship, speaking with twins and experts around the world. Her book is published by Doubleday. I'm very pleased it has brought her to our show today. Hello.
Thanks for having me.
When you set out to write about twins, did you intend to write a memoir about your own life experience?
You know, I really didn't. I kind of, I think I backed into memoir, started with reporting, and I realized once I was inundated in research and interviews that I was kind of stuck. And it was actually my twin sister, Robin, who, as you mentioned, is a journalist, too. She writes for the Times, for the culture section. I said to her, you know, I'm kind of in this quicksand of research and I don't know how to get out of it. And she was the one who reminded me to start with myself.
Well, I'm assuming that what you discovered is that a lot of people have had similar experiences. There has been more similarity that you've discovered amongst identical twins than differences?
Yes, I think that in terms of the questions of identity, of how you make your own way in the world, I mean, everyone has those issues, but they're highlighted when you're a double.
And it's only with identical twins, not fraternal twins.
No, the fraternal twins have many of the same issues. I would say that there's sort of a hierarchy of identity crisis. And the more alike you look, the harder your identity issues are. But fraternal twins absolutely wrestle with many of the same issues.
A lot of twins have told me, well, I'm the older one. I was born 25 minutes before my brother, my sister.
Robin and I are a minute apart. I'm a minute older. And she holds over me the fact that she was supposed to come first. But yes, actually, twins are very aware of which came out first. And I interviewed one of the psychologists who is a twins expert. She counsels twins and parents of twins. She refused to tell her twin boys which came out first, which was older, until their bar mitzvah date, because she thought it messes you up to have that investment in the firstborn.
Well, sibling rivalry occurs amongst all kids, but you get a sense that competition is a major theme in the lives of twins.
It is, but it's more nuanced than people think. I think everyone assumes that twins sort of start going to battle, Jacob and Esau, you know, it goes way back. It's a little more complicated than that. You feel very protective of your twin, and you also feel that their successes are in some way vicarious. They reflect upon you. So it's complicated. You are rooting for each other, but you also see your success in terms of another person.
Well, the ones we're more aware of are the high achievers, like you interviewed Tiki and Rondi Barber. Mm-hmm. Tiki was a running back for the New York Giants until he left to work for NBC. Rondi still plays for Tampa Bay. And I'm assuming that competition has driven them throughout their lives. A sense of competition with the rest of the world or
no, really
amongst
with,
themselves too?
Really with each other. And they talk about it more as a motivator than a stumbling block. They say that when they saw the other do something, it showed them what was possible. And I feel that's been the case for many twins.
But is that a problem when they're both high achievers, but one achieves a bit more than the other?
But, you know, there's a subtle difference in what they do. I mean, they're both football stars, but they very intentionally took different positions and they wrestled at different weights. And I found many twins do that. They particularly make sure that they have different territory. Even Robin is at the Times. I used to be at 60 Minutes. We made sure that even if we were in the same world, we had different zones. And that's, I find twins do that all the time.
Because if you both play the same position as a basketball player, I knew brothers who were soccer players, both played pro, but one was better than the other, had a better career. And I'm sure that that had a real problem, caused real problems in their relationship.
You're basically growing up with a measuring stick against you your whole life. You're not just comparing yourself against the world. You're always comparing yourself against someone who is growing up simultaneously to you.
Then there's the other side. There's a sense of loss. Twins often complain when they're separated for one reason or another. And you talk about Gregory Hoffman, whose twin brother died in the World Trade Center in 9/11. How has he coped with losing his twin?
Very badly. He was a really startling case to me, and I saw that he is not alone in that. He was a twin who was truly unraveled by losing his other half.
And it would have been it's different than if he had just lost a brother. I'm not just, but, you know, if he had lost a brother or sister.
I hesitate to talk about degrees of grief, but it does seem to be a unique kind of mourning, is that he really feels like he was never singular in the world and suddenly has to go it on his own.
Isn't there a theory that the loss of a twin is especially traumatic even with newborns, even in utero?
Yes. There's something called vanished twin syndrome. People don't realize that one in ten pregnancies starts as a twin pregnancy. And often, very, very early on in the gestation, the twin gets absorbed into the uterus. It doesn't make it through to gestation. And there is a belief that is getting to be more and more codified or legitimized that's saying that actually there's some kind of impact, some psychological impact by being born alone when you started as two.
Well, what happens when they're separated at birth? There was, I remember talking to these gentlemen who had been adopted, and one went to school, and somebody said, "Hi, Mike, how are you?" And he said, "My name isn't Mike," and he discovered that he had an identical twin. And he said he'd always felt like there was something missing.
Exactly.
And it turned out that the other boy, Mike, looked exactly like him, even had his same kind of haircut. And when it was on television, a third person who looked exactly like them discovered that they were actually triplets. And he had also had that same feeling that something had been missing, and they became very close as young adults.
Yes, it seems like there is some ineffable, like you are wired for partnership. And that when you are born without somebody, if you were meant to be with somebody, that it has some impact because you always feel a loss.
But then we also assume that because they share the same DNA, that their lives should be very similar. But sometimes one of them gets sick and the other one doesn't. One can have Alzheimer's, the other one can have cancer, and the other one doesn't.
Yes. What they have learned is that even when the DNA template is the same, and Rob and I are literally genetic replicas of each other, that one can get a disease and the other doesn't. And that's because of something called epigenetics, which happens over time, where basically your DNA is altered by your environment and you end up being able to be susceptible to something that your twin is not.
And twins are really researched a lot, aren't they? Because we feel we can learn all sorts of things about DNA.
Well, they are the petri dish. In a funny way, when you have identical twins and you compare them to fraternal twins, it tells you all kinds of things about whether they should be genetically predisposed to a characteristic or that somehow it's environmentally affected.
There's been research into the sexual orientation of twins. Is it common for one twin to be gay and the other one to be straight?
It is common, and it's very complicated because basically if you have identical twins and one is gay, there's a more likely chance that the other twin is going to be straight.
What about the other side of this? You tell the story of Tim and Charlie Lord, both carried genes for the Tay-Sachs disease.
It was a remarkable story where these identical twins, I went to college with one of them, wonderful guys, and they both ended up having infants die of Tay-Sachs disease. And it requires both parents to be carriers. So all four of both
what
couples.
What a coincidence.
It was unbelievable.
And did one clue the other one into the fact that there might be a problem?
Well, basically what happened was that one of their child started with the disease, and then the other one realized, hey, maybe I must be a carrier if my twin is. And they did the test, and sure enough, the cousin was also positive.
My guest is Abigail Pogrebin, who is the author of Stars of David, Prominent Jews Talk About Being Jewish. And now one and the same. My life is an identical twin, and what I've learned about everyone's struggle to be singular. It is published by Doubleday. We had an identical twin working for us until recently, and the other day I bumped into him on the street and then realized that there was something wrong, and it was his brother. But often that happens after a certain age when identical twins are, I guess, before puberty. It's almost impossible to tell them apart, often through the teen years. But something does happen when they become adults. And I'm not talking about getting different kinds of haircuts or wearing different kinds of clothes.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a change, except that Robin and I both live in New York City. And I would say I'm mistaken for her four times a week. That's not an exaggeration. It feels like I live, you know, in Mayberry, a really small town. I am hugged by strangers on a regular basis. It's something that comes with the territory with twinship.
So do you take credit sometimes?
I do, absolutely. Why not?
You also met a set of twins, Helen Rappaport and Per Puffels, who were experimented on by Dr. Mengele at Auschwitz. Did being twins help them go through that terrible ordeal?
I think it really is what made them survive. I mean, these were identical twins who were separated out by Mengele at Auschwitz. He stood at the trains and segregated out the twins because he wanted to do tests on them. And it is what allowed them to survive, was that they had each other.
So much of this discussion is nature versus nurture. We've been kind of circling around that. And I mentioned those triplets who were raised apart, but who turned out to be very similar, have similar tastes, look similar. The only way you could tell one of them from the other two is he worked out with weights, and so he had bigger muscles. But what about that, twins that are separated either at birth or at some other point? Do they tend to still be similar?
Yeah, that's what's amazing about the research, and it's not good news for parents who think that our child rearing is decisive. All the research about twins reared apart shows that actually parenting is not decisive, because when you have identical twins who were raised in different homes with different economic capabilities and different exposure to education and cultural kind of benefits and luxuries, those two twins ended up almost just as alike, I would say, as identical twins raised in the same home. And that's pretty startling. Discovery.
Well, there's also a theory that twins develop complementary behaviors. If one is outgoing, the other might be shyer. If one is extremely organized, the other might be a bit messier.
You know, there's something like a complementary partnership. It's when Robin has certain strengths, then I pick up other ones. You kind of operate as a team. So you're not just developing all the characteristics. Sometimes you get lazy about some of them because your twin has them and makes it up for you.
One of the missing from this discussion is the problems of parents. Now, and many parents come up with different theories. Some dress their twins exactly alike. Others do everything possible to make them different.
It's absolutely true. And I think one of the things that most parents of twins miss is how important it is to spend separate time with each twin. My parents never did. Robin and I have no memories of spending separate time with each parent, and it's amazing how decisive that can be.
But you mean you were treated as a team?
Yeah, we were always together, and it's not a terrible thing. It's not like I would say that we suffered, but it certainly had an impact, a very strong impact, on how we feel as individuals, spending time with each one of our parents and also spending time socially with others.
Is favoritism a problem with parents of twins?
You know, I interviewed a parents of twins coach. She's somebody who people pay a lot of money for to tell them how to raise twins. And she tells every group that she counsels that they should be prepared for favoritism, that they should expect it. It's inevitable. I hope that's not the case. But I also see that it's more than she who say that actually does happen with twins.
So many twins are dressed alike when they're kids. Some choose to dress alike when they're adults. Why is that?
You know, they celebrate the sameness. They kind of get almost addicted to it. They get a certain strength from it, a certain cachet. There's a star power in twinship, and some of them don't want to let that go even into their adulthood. So I interviewed twins who are almost 40, and they literally showed up at the interview with the same sunglasses on their heads and the same red shirt on and everything identical.
And then I'm sure there were others at 40 who did everything possible to look different.
Absolutely, they did.
And what did they say were the reasons?
They just could not stand the constant mixing up of each other, the constant mistaking for each other. They were absolutely done with it by the time they were adults.
What was it like for your younger brother to be raised with twins? Did he feel like he was left out?
I think there's no question that he was the third wheel, and I don't think it's easy. Rob and I were a very strong team, and it's very hard to break into that, both the intimacy and also the ease of our partnership, and he was kind of the odd man out. But my husband has identical twin sisters, and he's somehow managed to kind of make his way in the world, and my brother did okay too.
So you think that's a reason that you married him, because he understood the whole business of twinship?
I think that in a way there was some kind of visceral understanding of Robin and I, our mishigas, that he was comfortable with. And not every spouse is. You know, there's a lot of spouses that really can't deal with twinship. It's too much of an overpowering intimacy to break into.
Well, on the one hand, there's the intimacy, and there have been twins who've actually developed secret languages and separated themselves from the rest of the world. But then there is also that whole matter of finding your own space and challenging each other for space.
No, it's absolutely true. I think that is the conundrum for twins. You have this incredible intimacy, and you're used to it from before you could breathe, but you also have to be on your own. You have to be separate.
Now, there's been a boom in twins over the past quarter century. What's led to that?
I mean, fertility treatments, interventions have absolutely resulted in more more fraternal twins, not identical twins, but we are certain. I mean, if you walk down most streets in most towns, you're going to see a lot of double strollers these days. And that's mostly because of IVF.
Is that all completely a positive thing?
You know, it isn't. It is and it isn't. It is in the sense that families who couldn't have children before are having them. But what I think has been underplayed, and I have a whole chapter on IVF, is that there are significant risks to having multiples. And a lot of parents don't realize that going into these treatments.
They're not told?
They're not told with the clarity and the detail that exists. And I think part of it is because they don't want to hear it. There's a willful deafness, as some doctors talk about. They don't want to hear what the risks are.
Are people finding ways to reduce the risk of multiple birth?
There are. Single embryo transfer is sort of the cutting edge technology, and it's basically trying to convince parents that it is much safer and actually very successful to transfer one embryo instead of multiple embryos. It's the transferring of multiple embryos that leads to difficulties.
So when do you feel that you started establishing your own sense of identity?
You know, I did it earlier than my sister. I would say that Robin has kind of needed space later, really in the last 10 years, but I did it in high school when we went to different schools for the first time in our lives, and it was decisive for me.
And you say that if you were giving advice to parents to not do what your parents did, but to give each twin a certain amount of individual time.
Yeah, it's not as easy as you think. Often the twins push back. Often the twins say, we don't want to be separate. We want to go together. They're used to being together, and they prefer it that way. And parents really have to insist.
Abigail Pagrabin has written for many national publications, was a producer for Mike Wallace at 60 Minutes, as well as Charlie Rose, Bill Moyers, and Fred Friendly shows. And her latest book is called One and the Same, My Life as an Identical Twin and What I've Learned About Everyone's Struggle to Be Singular. It is published by Doubleday. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.